Welcome back to Disclaimers Aside, a bi-weekly podcast where I share the raw and honest stories of people in my community, Disclaimers Aside. I'm your host, Aisida Amadou, and let's dive into today's episode. Hi everyone, welcome back to another podcast episode. I am finally back in Berkeley as I'm recording the intro of this episode, but today's meat of the episode is going to be a conversation that I recorded a couple weeks ago back over winter break with my friends Aisatu and Lula. I'm really excited for this episode. It was a really long one, so I decided to split it into two. So today's episode is going to be the first part, and you guys will hear the second part of the episode in about 2 weeks. Before we dive into today's episode, I wanted to share, since I know some of you guys may be going back to college, starting off the new semester, something that I did recently that I think was just a great start to my semester and that I just recommend everyone do. I feel like it's not too late to do this, even if your semester or quarter has long already started, and that is to make a semester vision board. I've talked about making a vision board for the year as just a way to reset before the new year, but I feel like creating a vision board for every semester is also just as valuable as a year vision board. And it can be different, it can have some of the same aspects, but I think it's a great way to not only get you motivated for the semester, but just a good compass of like what you want this semester to be. And I think making your vision board digitally and making it your screensaver on your desktop or on your iPad is even better, because then every time you sit down to get some work done or to study or do any kind of schoolwork or be productive in any sense of the matter, you see that vision board kind of as a form of inspiration and a guide for you. It can be very motivating, it can be a healthy reminder of what you wish the semester to be, and I think it can just be so much fun to put together. So definitely make a semester vision board if you guys haven't already. I shared with you guys some of these snippets over on the podcast Instagram of things that I included in my semester vision board. I also put up a poll on the podcast Instagram for you guys to share some of the things that you guys included in your guys' semester vision board. So if you haven't already, take a minute, create your semester vision board. It can be like a little activity that you add at the end of your Sunday to-do list this weekend. But other than that, let's go ahead and dive into today's episode. Before we get into today's podcast episode, I wanted to give you guys a little bit of a trigger warning in terms of the audio of this episode. Fortunately, I don't know what happened with the mic situation, but again, the audio got a little bit distorted, so especially parts where we're laughing, just a trigger warning to headphone users, I would suggest listening to this episode with the volume just a tad lower than normal. Another thing too to keep in mind with this episode is we actually recorded it at my house over winter break, and so in the background you might be able to hear a little bit of a murmur of our parents in the living room chatting. So that's what that is kind of in the background. As much as I would love to have the perfect audio for every episode, this episode was probably one of my favorites that I've recorded. We just had such a great conversation that I'm really excited to share with you guys. So I hope you guys enjoy this episode despite some of the audio trouble. With that, let's go ahead and dive into it. Welcome to Disclaimers Aside.
Thank you for having us.
First of all, introduce yourselves.
Go ahead, sister.
Okay, my name is Lula Baldi. I'm a third year UCLA student. I'm also the co-founder of Lulita, a creative outlet and a small brand that we hope to continue.
My name is Aisatu Baldi. I'm also a co-founder of Lulita. I just finished my bachelor's degree at USC, and I consider myself to be a poet creatively.
So disclaimers aside, what's an unpopular opinion you guys have?
I have one.
She's gonna be like, I don't like Sergio Mas.
I believe that not everybody needs to be wearing Rick Owens.
Wait, what are Rick Owens?
They're like,
yeah, Rick Owens are ugly.
They kind of look like these, like, Rick. Like, they kind of look like off-brand Converse.
That name sounds so familiar, but yeah, wait. Yeah. These are popular?
Yeah. Sometimes on TikTok, like, some people will, like, pair them with, like, any streetwear outfit that they have. I think that unpopularly people need to, the black community needs to stop having
a chat. Not the black community. No, this is going to be very millennial of me, but I've seen these around, but I didn't think this was a phenomenon.
Yeah, no.
That's criminal.
That means you're on the good side of TikTok, because this is crazy. Do you have any Lula?
But I guess since we don't know, I don't really have one. The only thing I'm thinking of right now is the conversation we had about book talk earlier. Mm-hmm. I feel like that might be an unpopular opinion, maybe becoming popular, but like how book talk kind of changed the conversation of like the general bookish community. Mm. That's the one I can think of right now.
Yeah, I agree. No, book talk be hyping up the most basic books.
Mm-hmm.
I can't.
Sarah J. Maas,
Harlan Coben. Song of Achilles was good.
Or what's the Alchemist? I keep seeing that everywhere.
Oh, yeah, by Paulo.
It's like, you know when people try to be fake deep? That's an unpopular
Wait,
opinion.
The Alchemist? Oh, yeah. Isn't that a classic? Everyone and their mother loves that book. I've never read it.
Like, romanticizing book
talk? It's a good thing you haven't read it. It's like, I don't think it's...
It's one of those books you read in, like, high school.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
But, like, everybody is saying how it's their favorite book, but...
It's a little questionable.
Truly. So with the new year coming up, what is one intention you want to set for 2023?
I was actually having a couple conversations with my friend named Awa. She also goes to UCLA. She's from Somaliland. And she's from the Bay Area, too.
Oh! And so, wait, she's from Oakland, right?
Yeah.
I found her on Instagram. Yes, yeah, at the FAM event. Yeah.
So I love Awa. She's, like, actually my best friend at UCLA. Alhamdulillah. And we always have, like, random conversations at the In-N-Out or Boba places in Westwood. And our last conversation was kind of, like, how we're navigating burnout, and for some reason me and her always have like our worst and best days like aligned, and so we'll talk about it. We're like, how was your week and so we were both going through it, and it was during finals, and she was just emphasizing the fact that, or we started just talking about like goals of 2023, what our intentions are, like how we just want to like move on from how we feel right now. And I guess a lot of our intentions were to just like switch up our routine, but also feel more proud of ourselves, of like the many accomplishments we have. And I feel like a lot of what we discuss always stems from like overworking ourselves and never feeling like we made any progress with what we're working on. So I feel like a lot of our intentions were to find ways to like celebrate the moments that we're like we normally wouldn't but should. And a lot of that, I actually texted her yesterday just to check in with her, and we were talking again about like our goals and intentions. And I was telling her, I feel like one of my main goals for 2023, or like intention, would be to like reignite the way I see Allah, if that makes sense, like learning his different names and attributes and actually making effort to like see how he's always like in my life in different ways, if that makes sense, and just like so in control of everything. And I feel like without knowing him first, I can't really know myself or the intentions and goals that I want to like bring to life. So that's my main, after all that ramble, that's
no, those main are part. Both yeah. Amazing, honestly, because I remember like my internship with the Women's Center last year, I remember it was such a great environment to be around, because the people that I worked with, they focused so much on like celebrating like small accomplishments, getting through the week. Mm-hmm. They like continuously would check in on our capacities every week. Mm-hmm. And that was something that I've never experienced ever. Like in school and things, they never do that. And it was such a jarring experience, but like truly it changed my relationship with work and my perspective on things. Because when you forget to celebrate those moments, you can so easily fall into burnout.
I agree. I really like the point that both of you guys said in terms of intention. I think for my intention, I think a lot of it is centered around really just allowing myself to take up more space. I think for so long, and like especially this year, it has showed me a lot, like just like with a lot of the stuff that I've gone through, but I have a tendency to like shrink myself in efforts to like celebrate other people. I feel like I have a tendency to just like call people to take up space, but then like it's very hard for me to do that as well. And I think a part of it is honestly just like the difficulty with like being able to trust Allah and like everything that he's like set in stone in my life, because I feel like me not taking up space is almost directly challenging whatever he has meant for me. Like, even though he's saying, like, no, like, I should do this for you, I'm like, no, it's okay, this is for somebody else. Mm-hmm. So, I think going forward with 2023, that's like one of my intentions that I actually like really want to work on. But I know it's going to be hard because it is uncomfortable for me to take up space.
No, that's really good. Inshallah. I see that in your future.
Inshallah.
Okay, so what is a book or movie that you recently fell in love with?
I think for book, probably Interpreter of Maladies by Jhumpa Lahiri. It's like a series of short stories, and the reason why, and I found out it was actually published in 1999, which is like, for me, I guess kind of shocked me because it felt very timely to like, the present day now. And I think one of my top two stories were Interpreter of Maladies and I think it's called like A Temporary Gift or something like that. I can't remember, but it was like one of the first stories and I really, really loved it because it felt just human and it felt like she was just like describing the human experience. And I feel like there were certain moments that I could like stop and I'd be like, wow, like I relate to that so much. So that was one of my favorites.
I think a book for me was a book I mentioned earlier. It was a book I read during Ramadan called Against a Loveless World. And I guess maybe it was because it felt very timely, or like Aisatu said about your book choice. I don't know what it was. I feel very attached to that specific book and I don't know what it was. It was about the life of a Palestinian woman and how she navigates life with her family and alone and like the different perspectives that she takes about like the oppression going on around her personal thoughts about it, and in the midst of everything like she finds love and that person that loves her back, and like I don't know how to explain it, but it just felt like two souls meeting at the correct time and at a time that didn't feel like it was theirs, but they made it theirs regardless. And it felt like even at the end of the story when they were forced to be separated and they were literally no longer allowed to like be with each other, like sorry that's spoiler
it's okay, no,
but the whole point was like I think the ending, even like I feel like I'm not going to spoil anymore, but it was just one of those books where you leave feeling sad that you're no longer going to be a part of their story with them and no longer going to be like in their lives, because it kept me on the edge of my seat. It was like, and it wasn't like a romance love book like, oh, during this oppression time, like who's bae right now. It was also just like life is
who's bae right now. For real though, some of the books be like that.
And it's like corny.
A little out of touch with reality.
Like, we're going through this and you talking about bae, like leave me alone. But it was just like the I don't know, it just genuinely, I've never read a book that felt very real and just down to earth with a very specific narrative that a lot of people actually live through right now. So I don't know, it's the way it was written, like chef's kiss. So I would say that book had definitely had an impact on me.
I actually saw that book and I have the audiobook on my TBR, so now I'm gonna pick it up soon.
Yeah.
Because I've heard really good things about it.
I didn't even know. It was at Situ's bookshelf, but she doesn't read. Like,
you know, I read halfway through.
And she like got bored or something.
No,
I was
like after part two, I was like, okay, it's good.
No, bro. Part two was when it got really good, but yeah.
Okay, so the way I discovered you two was from DMing Aisatu on Instagram since 2019. And I was so excited to meet other Fulanis living in California that were related to me. Because at least on the West Coast, we're definitely so far and few between. So can you guys talk about where you guys are from originally and how your relationship with your culture has evolved living in the diaspora? Especially living in the diaspora in a place that's not around a lot of other people.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, we're from Guinea. It's in West Africa, for those who don't know. And our tribe specifically is a Fulani tribe. And we specifically grew up in... Well, we were born in L.A. Then we moved at, like, when I was 5, I said to was 6. And we moved to Rancho Cucamonga, California, which no one knows of, but it's real. And that's small. It's definitely a white city. And growing up in diaspora, it was kind of like there was no diaspora to like grow up in, if that makes sense. Like we were kind of the only, matter of fact, like West Africans in a lot of spaces we entered. Like we had another Fulani family that lived like 10 minutes from us, but we weren't that close, I guess. And just a Guinean community in general, they're all back in LA and the majority of them are like in the East Coast and then obviously back in Guinea and just spread across West Africa. And we were basically the only black family in a lot of different spaces, so it was definitely hard navigating that growing up. And then I talked to a lot of my other friends who kind of had similar experiences when we came to UCLA. And going to UCLA, where there's like a heavily black space at a PWI, it felt like another culture shock that you have to deal with, if that makes sense, in a very odd way. Like, it was definitely navigating the question of, like, am I black enough? Am I not? And not even on the range of, like, other topics of, like, skin color or different traditions that we have. But it just felt like constantly navigating a different type of identity crisis in your own community. And I also feel like being the only Guineans here, because a lot growing up, no one knew where Guinea was. Every time I would say it, they're like, where? Ghana?
That's Guinea, crazy.
Guinea pig. And the whole time I'm like,
no not the guinea pig.
I'm like, my country, Guinea. What you mean? Time, like, that added to the identity crisis, because I was like, so now you're saying I'm not African.
And it's crazy when you get it from other Africans.
Yeah.
It's like, y'all don't know your people?
I'm West Africans too. And I'm sitting there like, so I'm not valid then. Like, yeah. So that's why, like, being specifically from Guinea in black spaces and non-black spaces, it just felt like it was very isolating, for sure, I would say. So that's my perspective, but Situ can add more.
I agree. I think for a while, probably in, like, high school, there was a part of me that was almost, like, invalidating that aspect of my identity, because I think up until age 5, I was very, like, fluent in Pular, or basically the Fulani language, and it wasn't until, like, we started school that, you know, certain aspects of English came into the language, and that's why I really heavily resonated with the poem that you wrote about how, like, certain aspects of your language were infiltrated by, you know, languages that they would teach you at school. And so, like, instead of it being like, oh, we would only speak Pulat at home, now all of a sudden, like, my mom is able, like, is giving me sentences in English and all of these different things, or she would speak to me in Pulat and I'm responding in English. So come, like, 2014 or 15, and I'm, like, interacting with other, like, young Guinean people that, like, live in places like New York and the South and all these different things, and I'm seeing that they have, like, actual friend groups where they have, like, inside jokes in Pulat, or, like, being able to, like catch on to things very fast, and, like, I felt like I was missing out on something. And I think one of the worst things is, like, as a human being, is, like, the feeling of feeling like you're not going through life in the way that everybody else is going through. And so, like, I felt like I was missing out on something as a Guinean youth. And it was just, like, it was very hard. And I remember, like, at some point I like, started, like, downloading. Like, there was this, like, one book of, like, basically, like, Pulat for beginners. But I basically did it so that I could refresh mine. And then I basically started watching, like, Fulani soap operas on YouTube and stuff like that. And it was just, like...
Oh, my God.
It was... Honestly, it was such a time. Like, come COVID, it was, like, peak Clubhouse day. So I was, like, connecting with, like, other Guinean people there. And we would, like, kind of, like, speak in our language to each other. So overall, I started to realize that everything that, like, was kind of plaguing me was really me just, like, in search of community. And just in search of, like, not only people that look like me, but people that I could have inside jokes with, or debate about, like, what the best food is, or, like, why you like these certain foods. Because it's just, like, it's such a critical time in your life. And it's, I feel like it was very hard to express that to my parents, because they grew up with people that spoke the same language, and they had inside jokes, and they understood the humor and the lingo and the slang and all these different things. And I'm kind of just sitting there like, hey guys. So I think for me, like, what culture means to me is not just about the fact that you have culture, but it's also about the way that it can bring human beings together. And I feel like for so long when I was growing up, I loved having, like, family events or Guinean events, because, like, I could see the way everybody gathered, and it was just so cool to feel like, oh wow, like, I'm in a space where my presence is actually valued and, in fact, like, invited. So
yeah,
I think that's what it means to me, just the ability to bring people together.
I also think that I was thinking more about, like, my specific experience or our experience as a family. I feel like Also, our both sides of our family is huge. But we honestly don't know anyone, which eats me alive every single time. Like, we've met majority of my dad's side, and then my mom's side too, and we went to visit back home. And I don't know, it's like a running joke in my family, but our house is like the hotel house. It's like the one-stop shop. Like, people visit us, they always visit us, but we weren't really given the privilege to, like, go out, go back home all the time.
Yeah, it's expensive, like, and yes, it's a lot.
Exactly, and I feel like African families just have naturally, like, the stigma that they have huge families, and they're always all together, and their community is so vibrant. But I feel like knowing that that really is usually the case, being a part of a family that isn't really like that, it was so tight-knit. But sometimes I'm like, I want to branch out. I want to see my cousins, how they're living, and, like, knowing that my direct cousins, they were, like, living that life of, like, being really close with my other cousins and seeing them grow up together. It just, like, a lot of times, it was to the point where one of our favorite cousins visited, and we literally had a breakdown to our parents. We're like, at that point, you should have just, like, gave birth to us in Guinea at that point, or Cote d'Ivoire. Because it just felt like, yes, okay, you guys want to give us a better life. And I, at that point, when I got older, I realized how disrespectful that really was to say that to my parents. But in the moment, it just felt so real, because it was like, I'm not really searching for what the supposed American dream was supposed to foster for the rest of my life. I was actually just looking for my people. And my people are not around me. They're not here. So I felt like it was constantly searching for that. And I guess that definitely added to the imposter syndrome of other even African spaces, because they came from, like, a tribe, a huge community, and it's just one of them going to their school for that period of time, but at the end of the day, they're going back home to, like, people and more people, whereas me, it was kind of just going back to mom, dad, and Situ. Yeah. And at some point, it just felt like, if I don't have my family community and I don't have my friend community, then what's really the point?
It's very isolating, and that's why earlier when we were kind of talking about, you know, the other side of the spectrum of, like, people that complain when they have, like, the community in the diaspora where it can get toxic and everyone's in their business. I just feel like that negative aspect of it outweighs kind of the negative aspects of, like, isolationism that you get when you're not surrounded by your people, because it's so isolating to experience life where whatever space you turn to, you feel alone and you feel isolated. Is most of your, like, first cousins, they're all back home? Are you guys, like, the only family in the U.S.?
No, we have family in Virginia, we have family in Canada, but most of them are, like,
but that's far
out.
Yeah,
it's not like they're really close, but a lot of our family's, like, really spread out. Like, family in Switzerland, France.
Yeah, that's spread out.
This year, and I'm just thinking, like, damn, they're really
close. Let's get together, yeah.
And I'm in Rancho Cucamonga, like, okay. So
no, that I definitely see that, because for us it was interesting, because when the first half of my life I lived in Illinois, and that experience was so different from when we moved to California, because when we lived in Illinois it was a 6-hour drive to see most of my other uncles in, like, Kentucky and Cincinnati, and, like, be connected with the Mauritanian community. But then when I was 9 and we moved to Chicago, we moved from Chicago to California, it was, like, a fully different experience, because we're that much farther from our family. The Mauritanian community is nowhere to be found here. There's a small community in LA, and that was great to be able to, like, see them, but it's just different being, like, far away from your cousins and your people. I think it's so cool that you both go to school in the same city and are able to live together in college. Would you say your relationship got better as you got older and moved in together in a new city? Because, okay, Rahi and I always talk about this, because I've almost transferred to UCLA, and we're always like, oh, dang, like, if I had transferred to UCLA, we could have both lived together, you know. I feel like it's a different experience living with your family outside of your parents' home.
Definitely. Agreed. Let's start off with, like, the context of me and Sita's relationship. Because it's only me and her, we don't have any other sibling. Well, our parents basically forced us to be best friends at a young age. Like, to the point of, like, it kind of felt like I had a twin. Like, a built-in twin. Like, that's twin am. So, we were forced to be best friends at a young age. Like, we were told to do everything together, always trust each other, always have each other's back. Like, so, growing up, because I grew up on those values and ideals, it just didn't make sense to separate, even if we wanted to. Like, whether it was, I'm talking about, like, big moments. Obviously, during hangouts, friendships, all that. Like, you go through your own ways of life. But coming to college, because I was a 2020 a freshman and had to deal with COVID and lockdown and everything before transitioning to college, my first year was spent at home. In the second year, I too was looking for a place to live. And USC, UCLA are not that far apart, but obviously LA with traffic makes it 10 times worse. But in the back of my head, I was like, I don't know what it was, but growing up, I always had, like, plans. And maybe that's the Virgo in me, but, like,
that's the Virgo in you!
Okay, go to this school, go for that school. And so the minute I got to UCLA, and I was like, okay, like, me and sis are roommates. Like, there was never a question in my mind. This girl over here, she wanted to be a little crazy, in my opinion, and she started looking for apartments, like, with other friends from USC. And then the entire time she was struggling with that, I was like, bro, why don't we just live together? I literally don't mind commuting. And that was at the time when I just started Lolita, and like the equipment that comes with a small business, you can't really have in a dorm.
So yeah, no, like, that's not gonna in a triple.
Mm-mm. Yeah. At UCLA?
No.
Yeah, no, thank you. So I was like, logically, I have to get an apartment. And I was like, I'm not going to do, especially with COVID, I feel like everyone's social anxiety just went through the roof. So I was like, I personally do not want to deal with random
roommates.
Wait,
so 2020, you actually, like, moved to LA?
No. We moved in 2021.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, but still, COVID was still
around. COVID was still around, and everyone's social anxiety was through the roof, but we had to look in 2020, the end of it. So I was like, I'm just personally not going to deal with getting to know someone and have it in me, because I'm very particular in, like, organization and cleaning. I was like, I don't want to deal with it with someone else. Like, with my sister, it's tolerable because I've lived with her all my life. So, for me, it was an easy decision. It was stuff that kind of had a little bit of pushback. But when she came to the conclusion that it kind of just made sense and it was easier financially, commuting time, all of that. And, like, we both had to work on other... It was, like, school was our main priority. But I feel like what it taught me to live outside of my school... I feel like a lot of people, when they live at university is their entire life. And being in an apartment, especially with my sister, it kind of forced us to, like, remember that school is not, like, the end goal. Like, at some point, we're both going to graduate. So that forced us to explore LA more, make friends outside of both of our schools, and, like, adapt to LA and not just adapt to UCLA and USC. So I feel like we always knew that we didn't really want to make university our bubble in that sense. So for me, I didn't have that much of a desire to, like, be a college student dorm experience. Like, for me, I knew I wanted, if I could, have, like, more of an outside experience, and I was perfectly okay with that.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
I agree. I feel like...
You came around.
Yeah, I eventually came around. But I do think it made our relationship better, because, I'm not gonna lie, as much as it does sound like a fun idea to... live with your sibling, it actually is also very trying as well.
Thanks.
Because, like, living in an environment where your parents aren't around, so, like, if you guys are having an argument, you can't just go to your parents and be like, Lula's acting up and all these different things. Like, you actually either have to, like, take space, take a minute to breathe, and, like, actually sort it out.
Mm-hmm.
So I think our communication has gotten better, and I feel like we're able to read each other a lot better and actually be respectful of the fact that, like, as much as, like, we did used to argue a lot at home, like, since we are outside of our parents' house, it's not really sustainable to consistently have arguments, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
It's kind of the idea that you're trying to avoid conflict as much as possible, not in the sense that you're encroaching on your own boundaries, but you're being respectful and mindful of the other person you're living with.
Mm-hmm.
Because even though she is my sibling, she is someone that is a human being. And frankly, like, if you think about it, like, outside of Islam and outside of us being family, she doesn't really owe me anything. Like, because I think sometimes, and I guess I came to this conclusion, was that I think because of the fact that she is my sister, I took that for granted, in the sense that I didn't feel like I had to make much effort in order to, like, either sustain the relationship, repair certain things, or even just, like, literally apologize during arguments and all of those different things. That taught me a lot about that, because I think as human beings, we do have a tendency to think that we don't have to work as hard when it's family, because they're kind of, like, built-in people that, you know, Allah sends us down to this earth with.
Mm-hmm.
And so it taught me a lot about that. And I think just in general, I think it's just a nice thing to be able to go to school and, like, be like, because school's stressful in general, but to be able to know that you're going home to someone that gets you, that understands your habits, that understands how you operate, it's really nice. Because I'm not the type of person that likes to talk a lot sometimes after a long day. Lula can pick up on that instantly, and like vice versa, like Lula likes to talk about a long day, so I'm able to like sit there and listen, and we're able to discuss, and even just like being able to cook dinner with each other, and not just like introducing newer and healthier habits in terms of like eating and making sure that we're eating properly, and even having like a workout buddy and all these different things, like it's really helpful. And overall I think it's been beneficial.
I would say it's been beneficial to our relationship too. Well, I have a couple points that Sidhu made me think of, but our relationship in terms of communication, because like everyone emphasizes communication relationship, that's cute and quirky, but people don't talk about the importance of it is how it's going to be received. I don't think it's communication itself, because like someone's way of communicating might to be like raise their voice, because that's a personality. Another person might be to be short and quick and like not really understand the other side. So I feel like I feel like a lot of immigrant children can relate to this, where our parents, the way they talk to us is like with obviously an audacity, because they're our parents, but an audacity that's genuinely like, I don't think that's okay to say, like the way that you speak, which is like, or calling someone dumb or like degrading your children. So I felt like when me and Setu moved in, and even before that, we constantly would recognize the way that our trauma impacts one another, and would be very clear to not bring that to the table in our dynamic. So the way that we speak to each other, like we have like unwritten rules that if you cross the line, like I'm not talking to you anymore. So it'll be like, you're not allowed to call a person a name, you're not allowed to cut someone off, and that one we gotta work on a little bit, but we're not allowed to call each other names for sure. We're not allowed to like, I don't know, use things from the past and be like, this is why the way that you are. Like, basically very degrading language. Like, we cut that out so long ago, and I didn't realize it until, like, I take moments to reflect. Or I'll see, like, my friends with their siblings and how they speak, and I will really jump in. I'm like, bro, you don't need to call her dumb because she said she asked to borrow your pants. Like, it's not that serious, like, for me. And I feel like we really understood the impact of trauma, and if we want to actively work on it, it genuinely starts with like your family members around you. And if you have the chance to do so, I would say change that. But I also think another point is, like Setu was saying, about coming home to each other and being able to just talk after a long day, I feel like it forced us to really look at our like the aspect of sisterhood and genuinely take so much advantage of it, because it's not every day that you get to live with your sister that's 1 year older than you, who's basically twin, and like just like go through life together. So it was fun, and I feel like coming home to a roommate where I didn't have to explain how I felt, and I was gonna be taken in regardless. Like, I didn't have to explain like, oh, I don't feel the best today, or if I had, I don't know, something that went on during the day, I'm like, yo, so you will not believe what just happened to me, like this little blah, 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 whatever. So it just felt like, it feels very affirming to live with your sibling, but also in a way where we're constantly working on ourselves and working on a relationship and working towards better things separately. But at the end of the day, like, we have each other, like, at all times. So I would say that's definitely been our relationship.
No, that is so beautiful. And I feel like you guys have definitely learned a lot from the experience. Mm-hmm. Stuff that I'm personally going to take as a lesson. Hopefully Raki will listen to this podcast, takes some of it as a lesson. But I think that is so interesting, especially like, I found it interesting also, like, you speaking to your guys' relationship as just two sisters, because I feel like it's a different dynamic when you have a lot of siblings involved. I don't know how many siblings your parents have, but, like, my mom had 12, 13, my dad had 11. Mm-hmm. So it was, like, a lot of siblings.
It's 12 each.
12. Okay, so my dad, both parents had 12 siblings each. Mm-hmm. And I think because of that, they had a lot. And also, they had just, like, a different culture, you know, growing up. And so their dynamic with siblings was very different. My parents basically, when raising us, told us that, you know, when an older sibling said something, that was, like, law. It was, like, the older siblings are parents. You don't question your older sibling. You don't have conversations about things. And obviously, with my sisters, we have, like, a different relationship than that. Mm-hmm. But I think just finding that happy medium of like learning from the way that your parents raised you and the way that your parents communicated with you, I think is really, really important, because, you know, obviously our parents are not perfect. They grew up in a different culture too, but that doesn't mean that we should continue that pattern or adopt that way of treating people and treating our family. And I love what you said about taking your siblings for granted, because I feel like since you know that your siblings are going to always be there, it's easy to not put in work in that relationship. And that's something that I've seen, especially, like, after going to college far away from my siblings, too, is, like, truly, if you don't make an effort to continue that relationship or keep up with your siblings, like, that relationship is gonna fade so quickly.
Because
so.
It kind of feels forced at some points, like, oh, we have the same mom and dad, but what else do we have in common? Exactly, yeah. And I feel like I also dealt with that with Situ where, because our parents always remind us the type of personalities me and Situ have. Like, I'm more of the outspoken one, very protective of Setu, and Setu's more of, like, the quiet kind of, you gotta make her feel comfortable to speak and, like, really show herself. So I feel like naturally I was already always really loud about my love and protection for Setu. And I always felt growing up, because her personality was more reserved, that she didn't feel that way about me. So a lot of the times, like, it would be me, what it felt like, me making effort all the time to, like, hey, Setu, like, bestie. That's what for me, moving in with her, like, it wasn't a second thought. It was, like, Setu this, Setu that, everything me and Setu. So it was, like, a very unhealthy attachment, one, and dynamic between the both of us. And at some point, I had to, like, relieve myself of that and understand that we are each our own individuals. But yet, it still is very much important to, like, take care of your family first, especially if you have the privilege of having a healthy dynamic or being able to work towards that. Because I feel like it's very easy to take advantage of your sibling, because I felt at some point that's what I felt like with Setu. Like, not to get a little personal, but that's at some point.
but it felt
like that, because I had this unhealthy attachment that just, like, fueled the different ways we would act towards each other. But I definitely, like, agree with Setu's words that it's very easy to just take advantage of family in a way that you think will benefit you, because you're always gonna have family around. But the reality is, like, it's
our
not,
time is numbered.
Very much so.
So I'm going to go ahead and end off today's episode here. The rest of this conversation will be released, and part two will come out in about 2 weeks. So make sure to subscribe to this podcast and stay tuned to listen to the rest of the conversation. And of course, if you guys aren't already following the podcast Instagram, it's at Disclaimers Aside. The link is in the show notes. Definitely follow that if you guys aren't already, because it is kind of a community space for the podcast listeners and a way that you guys can interact with these bi-weekly podcast episodes. Also, make sure to check out the show notes for all of the relevant links that we mentioned in today's episode, as well as Isatu and Lula's Instagram handles. Besides that, I will see you guys in my next episode. Bye.